Hello and welcome to W Rated, where we willingly watch the world's worst rated movies. Today, you've joined us on our Road to Razzies, a special run of episodes looking at the nominations for the worst films of 2022, according to the controversial Golden Raspberry Awards. For new listeners, I'm Daisy, and as always, I'm joined by podcast co-creator, host and editor Claire. Claire, do you want to tell us what film we're talking about this episode?
We are talking about Blonde, the 2022 film directed by Andrew Dominik, currently streaming on Netflix. It has a 42% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes, a 32% audience score, and a 5.5 out of 10 on IMDb. We're seeing a trend of our Razzie films so far that they all seem to be around the 5 out of 10 mark on IMDb. Quite a lot of fluctuation though on Rotten Tomatoes, and this being one of the few that has a lower audience score than critic score.
I think I can see why though. Like, I think anyone who knows anything about what Blonde is, I think the positives they've heard is the technicalities of it and the way that it's shot. And that's something that I really enjoyed. So for people who don't know about Blonde, it is a fictional story, I guess, of marriage.
Adapted from a book,
yes. Which was the key thing for me understanding how I felt about this film. It's a fictional retelling somewhat, you know, it's very much woven in with things that did happen, of Marilyn Monroe. And it's, as Claire said, it's based on a book that did that.
By Carol Joyce Oates?
Yeah, that sounds right. I'll go for that. And yes, this was, you know, really highly anticipated. Ana de Armas plays Marilyn. She definitely looks the part. She's done some good stuff in her career. So yeah, there was a lot of anticipation about this one.
Well, and this is, I think, as often happens, this is one of our Razzie nominated films. It's also Oscar nominated, as Ana de Armas was Oscar nominated for her performance in this, which wouldn't have been my nomination, but I also don't have a problem with it. I have a lot of problems with this film, which we'll get into very shortly, but her performance was not one of them. And so whilst I wouldn't have nominated her, I can see why others did.
Yeah. And I think whenever you have a biopic of any kind and you're playing a character that people know really well, if you get it right, that's like a shoo-in for the Oscars. And neither of any kind of awards are, number one, controversial, number two, corrupt in some way. I think it's fair to say somewhat. It's very, very rare with these big awards that there's, you know, fair and just things going on behind the scenes. But we all know with the Oscars and stuff, if you can play someone that someone recognizes and it's done well, that's like a big tick in their eyes of, oh, acting done good. Tick.
They did not look like self. Well done.
Yeah, it's just like one of those things. And it's the human condition. Like, I think we can agree that when you watch something, you go, oh, I fully believed it was them, especially someone as iconic as Marilyn Monroe. You think, wow, she did a good job. That being said, even, you know, away from that, I think it was a really effective performance. She showed real range. With the screenplay that she had, I think she threw herself into it. And I think it's probably the biggest in terms of critically acclaimed role that she's probably done.
Yeah, I can see why she took it. I agree with most of what you're saying regarding her performance. I felt like where then I noticed she wasn't that strong was the recreations of the famous Marilyn scenes.
Right, okay.
The Gentleman Prefers Blonde recreation, truthfully, I thought was done better by Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn than I felt like.
Was that in Birds of Prey or something?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't really remember that.
I thought she was great as Norma Jean / Marilyn in all of the actual drama bits of the film.
The bits you never saw, so that it fills in the blanks, but the bits you know and are burnt into your mind, I can understand that.
She didn't have the same charisma. I think she was really good at playing the bits
the vulnerable
of the film
stuff
that everyone hates, the really vulnerable stuff. Yeah, I thought she was so vulnerable and so open, and she did make me sad, and it was tragic to watch. But I do think she struggled on those recreations because Marilyn became such an icon because she did just have that, like, you know, the je ne sais quoi that, you know, can't be bottled. She just had that presence on screen that you couldn't replicate.
Yeah, and it's almost as if this film was Norma Jean from start to finish of what mm-hmm. you know, it's really hard to talk about this because it's a real person. Some of the stuff is mm-hmm. real, but some of it isn't. And that's probably yeah. one of the main, like, problems of the film. But from what I can understand about it all, it felt she played a really good Norma Jean cosplaying as Marilyn, mm-hmm. but she didn't mm-hmm. quite get the facade of Marilyn that we all actually, the public felt like they knew who she was as a yeah. person. And I don't know if that's the book, the direction, mm-hmm. her performance, the story that's being told. But yeah, I think that probably for me is the distinction between what she did well and what maybe didn't yeah. work as well.
Yeah. I mean, for me, so this film premiered at Venice mm-hmm. and it premiered with a lot of noise and there were a lot of instant criticisms of it. Mm-hmm. But then there were people like our lovely friend Connor who was just completely taken yeah. by it. I mean, he loved it. And I was very interested in it, so I chose, it was a Netflix original, but it did get a small cinema release in order to contend for awards. I took myself to the cinema to see it because I wanted to see it on the big screen because of the filmmaker prowess, because I wanted to, it did look, based on the trailer, that it had some beautiful visuals. And I also, it's very long, and I thought that if I watched it at home, I wouldn't pay attention.
I paused it quite a lot and then came back to it.
I have to say, I watched it in the cinema and I was so very bored and I got my phone out, which normally
heinous.
So I ended up in a screen with just myself yeah. and I sat on a really comfy sofa and another couple who were on a sofa, I sat in the middle sofa and they were on the sofa to the back right.
Yeah.
And they just kept talking.
Oh.
And it was really annoying me. And even though it was a boring film, I just couldn't pay
attention.
Cinema
etiquette. So people are animals these days.
So I took myself all the way over to the other side of the screen. And then I believe they actually left about an hour and a bit into it. And so then I just got my phone out because it's fuck me, this is so boring. Mm. And so that was there were a lot of issues and I understand why people have issues with it. And there were a lot more issues after Mr. Andrew Dominic started doing larger press for it, which we can touch on. But my biggest issue with this film was I just personally thought it was so fucking boring and I didn't think it deserved half of the controversy it was getting because I just thought it was incredibly dull.
Interesting. I didn't think it was dull at all. I actually felt like I was really drawn in and intrigued and engaged by it.
But you had to pause it multiple times.
Yeah, but that's just my attention span. I can't watch, I cannot watch a whole film at home without pausing it. I just can't do it. Yeah. My attention span's shot to shit. That's why I like going to the cinema, like you said.
Yeah.
It was, and it's also a very long film as well. Like, when you know, when you've got the little bar at the bottom and you know, I think it freaks you out into going, oh, I need a break now. Anyway, I did watch it all in one evening though, which I very rarely do with films, which most people would be absolutely horrified about. But for me, I think that the creativity in the way that it's edited and put together and shot, and you know, I was really enamored with that enough, and I didn't really know
Anna de Armand
very good. And I also do think she's obviously wonderful to look at, and if she was as she was in this one doing a very good performance. I mean, even in like not so great films like what was that, Deep Water, I really liked it because I was just like, it knows what it is, and she's just, and how she can be like, obviously she's absolutely stunning and gorgeous, and how she can do those kinds of central roles, and like, I've never seen the Bond one, but just from marketing what she looks like, and then also play a much more not overtly sexualized role in like Knives Out, for example.
Yeah, she's so timid and she's beautiful, very she's timid girl next
young.
Door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she's like, you know, she's of this new wave of movie stars, and that's really exciting for her. So I think there was a lot for me to go, oh, I like watching her. I think this is shot really interestingly. I don't know a lot about Marilyn Monroe, and I can't remember if I knew going into it whether or not. Oh, I think I did. I didn't realize right at the beginning though that it was fictionalized. So mm-hmm. when I was watching it, it made me feel really uncomfortable. But then I paused it and looked on the Wikipedia and I was like, why has this been written? And why has this been made? And I realized it was a book. And I was like, mm-hmm. okay, this makes more sense.
Yeah. So we'll say, like, I do agree. I think I would have just, I really needed it to be re-edited.
Right.
Because there were some gorgeous visuals. And one that still sticks in my mind, I think, is like at a point when she's having sex with the two characters.
Is it the waterfall?
Charlie. The waterfall. Yes. That was just brilliant. So artistic and so brilliant. And there were lots of elements like
just
that.
Just made it very dreamy. And I think that was really key to the story of she was kind of floating through the life with the alcohol and the drugs and just the stardom of Hollywood, and it was all a dream to her.
But then for me, it then slept into just really drudgery biopic standard. I am a biopic and I am going to go through these moments in this person's life, and then you'd go to another kind of weird, sensual, cutesy, cool thing, and then it was like, and now for some more biopic stuff, and I was like,
so it was quite jarring for you, the visual stuff versus the beats that
It just made it feel much longer. It just really, I felt the runtime. I really felt
it. It's interesting because I'd like to pick that back up when we talk about Elvis and how you felt about that, because I think it's similar but in a different level of energy, opposite ends.
Yeah, and I think
they both
the energy
suffer.
Really helped me for Elvis. Right. Like, it kept me the energy. Got and you. The music is what it completely would have had the same problem if not for the music and Elvis.
So for me, the thing that I struggled with this film is that on a technical standpoint, as a film of itself, I think it was fantastic and it would have been one of my favorite films of the year. Morally repugnant. Like, I cannot stand by it.
The bit that hit me for the moral repugnancy isn't even, there's a lot of like sexual abuse stuff, which again, there's actual, no, I don't think historical proof that it happened, but there have always long been rumors and things like that. The morally repugnant bit for me, at which point it completely lost me, I was already a bit bored and I wasn't feeling it, was the abortion stuff and the baby talking in the room. I was just like, I'm out, I'm done.
So I already knew that was, again, Twitter is I was about to say a gift and a curse, but it's not, it's just a curse now. I already knew about that going in. So again, the shock factor.
I didn't have any. Because I saw it in the cinema the week before it went to Netflix because I wanted to catch it
big
screen. Yeah. So I knew it was controversial. And our friend Connor Lightbody, you can read his review of it. He stands by his review, even though his view of the film has changed because of Andrew Dominik's kind of conversations. And I think it's clouded his view of the film, but he loved it. He had spoken to me about it before because we have very similar tastes, and he thought I'd really love it because he thought it was really weird and wacky and really intense. But he didn't want to spoil it for me, so I didn't see things like that come in. But yeah, that just offended me in so many ways, shapes and forms. Even though the visual was quite clever, I was just so angry. And yeah, that whole sequence when
is
she
it in
is
the book,
with,
do you know?
I'd almost definitely believe it's in the book, but I don't know. But who is her husband at that point? Is it Arthur Miller?
Yes.
Is that who he is?
I think so.
The whole sequence of her and Arthur Miller just offended me. The whole daddy thing, oh, it made me feel sick. Daddy, everything about that whole sequence.
I think this is where it becomes so difficult, because it's like, if you were to make a film of a fictional person and that was happening and it was done in a nuanced way where you understood why people were acting the way that they were, brilliant. I can, you know, someone's actions on screen aren't necessarily a promotion or an endorsement or a celebration of these things. When you're dealing with a real person and these stories aren't just stories, they are based on rumors, you're getting into some really murky water, and you're essentially, which I think is the fundamental problem with this film, abusing an abused woman after she's already died. Like, it, that's the long and short of it, in my opinion. And that's why I went straight down the middle with my rating, because from a technical standpoint, I thought it was one of the best I'd seen that year. But I just couldn't stand by the moralness or lack of it.
Seriously, this was my second worst film of the year. It was 61 out of 62 films I saw. And it was because, though I thought the visuals were really interesting, I was like, you could have just made me a music video and it would have saved me a lot of time. I was bored. I was irritated by how bored I was. And then when you add the moral stuff on top of it, that just pulled me all the way down. And just to go back, so the decision to include the talking fetus in the film it's a throwaway. So this is from an Esquire article. It's a throwaway line in Oates' books. a fleeting fear that any anxious, expectant mother might have as she struggles to sleep at 3 a.m. And baby in her womb, gripping her tight, you won't hurt me, will you? You won't do what you did last time. The book passage quickly moves on to another issue, but Dominic chooses to fully lean into anthropomorphising it and to terrible effect.
This is the thing, and I think, sorry to quickly jump in, but
yeah.
I think when it comes, this is why my opinion has gone back and forth about it. But when I found out it was a book first, I was like, right, this makes sense. I understand why this fictional story exists. Because when you've got a book, you are not, I don't know how to explain this properly, but you are still relying on other people's imaginations. Mm-hmm. You are, right, everyone, like, obviously there's non-fiction books, don't get me wrong. But if you're reading a book and you're going into it and you're like, this is a re-fictionalized thing of Marilyn Monroe. Mm-hmm. Because you're not seeing things and you're imagining it, everyone's version of that book looks different. So in some ways, it's not fully realized. But I think as soon as you make it a film, especially when you're making real people and characters and you're having you're casting people that look like them and making sure they talk like them and you're recreating what those scenes look like, etc., it becomes really kind of irresponsible, because I think people expect from films like this that they are based on some truth, and given that they're placed on what's the word I just said, things on rumors. Mm-hmm. It's just salacious in a way.
I think that's it as well, because I'm really trying to struggle with my comparison to another film that came out the year before. But I think that is the difference into why I see them so differently, is that these aren't just made up things. Mm. They are based on half truths, and they are almost turning the half truths and making them seem like real truths.
Yes.
Whereas the other film I'm thinking of is Spencer, which I adored.
Okay. It was one of my favorite. I haven't seen it.
2021. That is it's not a biopic, it's a fictionalized telling of Princess Diana's last Christmas with the royal family before she died, or maybe before she divorced, but one of her last Christmases anyway. It's not the last one. It's very close before her death, I believe. I'm not sure how long they were divorced before she died. But that is almost all completely fictionalized. There's no proof. But it plays on things like the fact that she clearly had an eating disorder, that she had a very poor relationship with Prince Charles, that she had a somewhat okay relationship actually with Queen Elizabeth. But I think for me, the fact that the truths that are in it are documented truths, that the relationship was very poor, that she did have a good relationship with her sons, that she found those environments very difficult, that she did have an eating disorder, that she did self-harm, even though it was tough to see them, and I'm sure people were probably scandalized, and I don't know how, you know, her children feel about that film. I can imagine it'd be difficult for them. But it's also, it's a contained, it takes place over 2 days.
Yeah. It's so like, it's behind closed doors, right?
Yeah.
None of us will ever know what really happened.
What went on.
None of us other than the people that were there. And that's the same for the Marin and stuff, don't get me wrong, but
it's her whole life.
It's her whole life.
And it takes lots of real things and then lots of unsubstantiated things. And when you're mixing all the real stuff with the unsubstantiated stuff, it's hard to believe
that the answer. And giving it equal weight. That's the difference as well. It's like, I can understand the way you've just explained that with Spencer is, it's taking a few things that are documented and we know, and it's exploring what that might have looked like. And it's very clear in that containment. With this, it's no, I can't say however many, I had to stop my mum and aunt watching this. I said, you will not enjoy it. You will hate it. I don't want you to have to watch this.
It was a lot more experimental than I think it advertised itself as.
I think so. And I think that's the thing as well with the marketing. I really don't think it made itself clear that it was a fictionalized thing.
No, not at all. Because even with Spencer, I do believe at the start there's a little bit of text and it doesn't say this is a fictionalized, but it talks about fables.
Right.
And so the implication is that this is a fable and as listen, well. Like, there's something to do with fable. Whereas I don't think this had any text at the start.
And listen, I'm well aware that there's a lot of people who would come back and be like, it's not their job. Like, it's on the internet. It's very clear for people to find. But if I'm thinking about my mum and my aunt, for example, going in and watching that, not like just seeing the trailers and expecting a certain film, obviously they're grown women. They'll get over it. Like, but at the same time, it's just like, what kind of responsibility do you have and what kind of damage can you do? It's just to have a bit of a risk assessment about it, I think, because there are certain some horrific films out there that are very emotionally damaging to watch that I will never ever watch because it's just I just could never bring myself to do it. And then there's other films where you know exactly what you're getting and it's actually just as offensive because you're like, you're treating me like a child. Art is subjective. You seek it out. It's not the responsibility of the filmmakers to do everything for you. But there's just something that doesn't sit right with me about this that I feel like the word advantageous and vulnerable keep mixing around. And it's just that combination of the chances and opportunities taken and sort of blown up and celebrated versus who this is about, what point in her life it's talking about, how it's depicted, the way that it's picked certain things, you know, like the rumors and stuff. Mm-hmm. Those two things together just don't sit right with me.
Yeah. And I think it's the thing as well that a lot of other people have said far better than me, unfortunately. So I'm very much plagiarizing and paraphrasing. But it's the fact that it's talking about this woman who, from a very young age, was given no agency and was a victim of various kind of levels of abuse for her whole life, whether we know that to be true, half true, or just rumoured. But one of the things that film historians have said is that Marilyn Monroe was very smart and she turned that bombshell image to her advantage and she took her vulnerabilities and made them her selling points. What this film does is takes away any agency she might have had. So you're telling the story of someone who struggled to gain agency in their life, but from all historical tellings had at least a level of agency in the small bits that she could have, she took and she ran with them and she built herself a successful career. What happened in her private life happened in her private life. We won't know, we weren't there. But this strips any level of agency she had and makes her seem like a small doll that was just manoeuvred around her entire life.
And you know what didn't sit right with me? It was they did that and it was almost as if they, and I don't know if it was the direction because we know he said some stuff, it was almost as if it was depicted like she should have been grateful for all
of
this.
Should have been grateful that she was
like it does have misogynistic undertones, absolutely.
Oh, very much so.
And I watched, because of that, afterwards, I really wanted to watch a Marilyn Monroe documentary. So I sought out one that I felt like I'd really like. It's the CNN one, because I really like their decades and their hit the movie documentaries. Mm. And they did a four-part. It's not available in the UK at the moment, as far as I'm aware. But they did a four-part, and it was all about who she became throughout her career. So the first one was something, and then it was like icon, sex symbol, you know, all of this thing. Mm-hmm. But throughout the whole thing, like you say, people who knew her and people who studied her, it was always about, yes, she was vulnerable, as every person is. Yes, there were, you know, some substantiated, some not, horrible things that happened to her. But that's only one part of the story. Mm-hmm. And that's what Blonde focuses on throughout the whole time.
Blonde only has her as a victim, not a survivor of abuse. And that's, it's a victim.
That's kind of unforgivable, to be honest.
Well, let's take a look at the nominations. Mm-hmm. So it's got the top nominations. It's nominated for 8 awards. We've got Worst Picture, Worst Remake, Rip-Off, Sequel. I guess Adaptation technically falls under that. We've got 2 Worst Support and Actor nominations in Xavier Samuel and Evan Williams as Charlie Chaplin Jr. and Eddie Robinson Jr. We've got 2 Worst Screen Couple nominations for both real-life characters in the fallacious White House bedroom scene, which is Marilyn Monroe and John F. Kennedy, and also for Andrew Dominik and his issues with women, which, you know, shout out to the Razzies on that one. You know, they're a misogynistic group and these awards are very problematic, but
didn't
one
expect them to gung-ho for women in a good way.
And then nomination 7, Worst Director, Andrew Dominik, and 8, Worst Screenplay. Do you want to tackle any of them straight off the bat?
I mean,
we've kind of talked around a lot of them already.
Yeah, so just to sort of close the loop on the adaption stuff, I think it's really hard to say because I would read that award as a comment on the way it's been adapted, not just the fact that it is an adaptation. Because say, for example, yeah. Oscars, you've got best adapted screenplay, because technically mm-hmm. the people can't get have all the credit for creating the original idea. Slightly different.
Yeah.
This is like, mm-hmm. this is the worst remake, rip-off, sequel. So of all of the things, this is the worst of the ones that actually are based on something yeah. else. To me, that mm-hmm. has to infer it's the way that, it's the way that it's been mm-hmm. adapted. And from yeah. the little things you've sort of mentioned so far, as much as it's controversial and it might not be my cup of tea, and it might not, it's probably a bit morally dubious, mm-hmm. I think the fact that I think this is a really, it's an interesting idea for a book, because if you could, but I would have wondered what would have been better is if she hadn't have died, what would have happened? It's like a little bit more separate from a thing of like...
No, because that's in the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood train of thought, and I thought that was
no, shite, but I'm not saying so it no. would be good. What I'm saying, it would be like less morally like dubious and more easily fiction, like easy to term it's fictionalized. So what I'm saying is the book, I don't know whether it's good or not, but I imagine it's better than this.
Yeah.
And I also imagine in the way that it's written versus made, and the, mm-hmm. The, I keep saying moral, but the morality around it, I imagine is probably better handled as well.
I think it was...
I know it's controversial still, but...
I listened to the Big Picture podcast, which... love, and Amanda Dobbins, the co-host of that, had both read the book and was very invested in this film when it was being made. I don't think she enjoyed the film, but I think she even said, though she enjoyed the book, it's a controversial book, and it was a very strange choice to adapt it, which I think is why she was so interested in the film, because she was like, it's an odd adaptation to go for. Mm. Like, and it's also a very old book though. Mm. Like, it was published 20 years ago, when we didn't really have the internet in the way that we have it now, so I don't think anyone expected it to be this big thing.
Yeah, for sure. So I probably, I don't think...
I mean, do we just want to talk about Andrew Dominik?
Yeah, let's open that can of worms. I can't remember what he said. What did he say?
I've got a few. So he said some very kind of offensive things. So one of the things he said was that he doesn't think that she should be held up as an icon.
Right.
So
then why are you making it in the first place?
Well, because he wants her to look. So lots of people challenged him about the fact that she made him, made her vulnerable and not seem like this person of agency. And his argument of that was... So, like anyone, she would make these stabs towards being in control of her life, but she clearly wasn't in control of her life. Any person that's killing themselves is not a figure of female empowerment. As much as we want to reinvent Marilyn Monroe as the female du jour, I don't think that that's responsible. Mm. So he is saying that because she made her decision to end her life, that at no point did she control her life at all, and that she cannot be seen as a figure of female empowerment. And like, just for me, I don't feel like anyone has any right to ever make any assumption on how the only person who gets to decide whether they take their life or not is that person. Yeah. And I don't think anyone has any right to cast judgment on that.
And even if you have that opinion, which someone can have, fine. Yeah. Why are you making a film about it? Because that to me just says, you could not wait to tear her down.
Yeah.
What is the point of this film if that is your opinion of the person you're... If it said it slightly differently, which was, she was a very complicated character, I wanted to show that it wasn't... Like, everyone knows this. Like, come on. She's not just Marilyn Monroe. Yeah. Marilyn Monroe was an act, so to speak. She was Norma Jean. Whatever. It would have been cliche. We all know that. But it would have been I want to show her as multifaceted. I want to show that there's tragedy and this and that. But him basically being like, she's not who you think she is, she's this. It's like, okay, so that was your purpose of showing it. So you literally did it to defame her, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Why? So much other stuff he could have done.
And he just talks about how, like, if the audience doesn't like it, that's the audience's fucking problem. The fucking audience's problem. Oh, like, he doesn't care if people don't like it.
Well,
like,
which... In an ordinary setting, I'd be like, good for you. Like,
there's a way of saying it.
It just sounds deplorable in the way that he talks.
So this was an interview. I'm afraid I'm not sure what magazine this is an interview from, but it says, what does it say to an audience that we're not seeing that she formed her own production company, or that she was involved in opposing the anti-communist witch hunts by the House Un-American Activities Committee in the 1950s, or that she fought against segregation on behalf of Ella Fitzgerald and so on? So all of these big things she did. And his response was, that stuff is not really what the film is about. It's about a person who's going to be killing themselves. So it's trying to examine the reasons they did that. It's not looking at her lasting legacy. I mean, she's not even terribly concerned with any of that stuff. If you look at Marilyn Monroe, she's got everything that society tells us is desirable. She's famous, she's beautiful, she's rich. If you look at the Instagram version of her life, she's got it all, and she killed herself. Now, to me, that's the most important
thing. I knew that's what it was about. That's what I said earlier, That she should have been grateful. He hates her.
Yeah. It's not the rest. It's not this moments of strength. Okay, she wrestled control away from the men at the studio because, you know, women are just as powerful as men. But that's really looking at it through a lens that's not so interesting to me. I'm more interested in how she feels. I'm interested in what her emotional life was like. So he wanted to make a film about a small, weak woman and all the reasons why her life was terrible and she wanted to kill herself.
He just flat out said, I don't care about all this other stuff he's done because it doesn't fit my narrative.
I only want to care about her as this weak blonde victim.
Yeah. And it's pure lies. He's just admitted it's lies. How can you...
It's not even lies. He's just very purposely crafting a narrative and skipping out.
Yeah. But he's saying that this isn't what I'm making my film about. It's not about her. Yeah. Those all things happened to her and they would have impacted how she felt, what she did. But he's basically turned around and be like, that doesn't fit my narrative and my view of the woman and therefore I will... God, he's horrid.
Yeah, so he, and my issue is, obviously, I don't like people that hate women anyway, for many reasons, not least being I am a woman. But also, you know, from my standpoint of being like a Samaritan's volunteer and working on Samaritan's crisis hotlines, his opinion on people who make the decision to take their lives is abhorrent to me. And I think, you know, thank God maybe that he has never been in that situation. Thank God that he maybe has never lost anyone, or maybe he has lost someone from suicide and, then, and that's
affected
why he's like this. But I just can't, you know, I think that opinion, like that, oh, if you took your life, that you never had any power and that you don't deserve to be celebrated and that the only thing we should remember of you is the fact that you took your life. I just think that's a disgusting stance. Mm.
I might reduce my rating after reading this.
And I think that's what a lot of people...
It's not just me going, I don't agree with his opinion and therefore I don't want to rate it based on, you know, in some sort of like protest. It changes my view of the film completely. Yeah. Like I knew...
And I think that's what a lot of people... A lot of the people who supported the film and gave good reviews, like, please, can someone stop him talking? Like, please, can someone stop him?
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yuck.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the most deserved Razzie of all time, personally. Worst screen couple, Andrew Dominik, and his issues with
women. Yes, absolutely. And just give him worst director while we're at it for that reason as well.
Yeah, because personally, whilst there were some scenes of beauty, they were
But
stretched.
They're not beautiful anymore because of what the purpose was behind them. It completely changes what those things meant.
But even taking that out, for me, there was also just too much filler. Mm. It was too long. There was no pacing. There was no...
There's also so,
we'll
no
give the worst director
for
as well.
Her to be topless so much.
No, not at all. But again, because he wants her to be... He's like, let's all look at her in this way.
But that's what takes away from the beauty in the visuals to, oh, this isn't a look of admiration and vulnerability. Yeah. And it's a look of... Well, it kind of like...
Pity?
Kind of
and shame
it's that pity, it's that shame. Difference between someone finding someone attractive and loving them as a person and filming them in a beautiful way versus someone
I loved you despite your insecurities just, and because of
as
your
a whole person
in.
Versus
I'm
filming you because I hate you, you know, those people that try and hit on women and then when they reject them they call them ugly and bitch and all of that. It's that kind of attention he's giving her, not out of even curiosity. Doesn't need to be admiration, respect and curiosity. Nah, he hasn't even done that.
Cool. So worst supporting actor for both Xavier Samuel and Evan Williams as Charlie Chaplin Jr. and Eddie Robson Jr. Don't think they particularly acted it very well, but I also don't think they were given a very good screenplay or good direction. I think they were told to just prat around.
Yeah, I think they fit what it was the film, yeah, wanted. The tone of the yeah. film, and you know, they were meant to represent this kind of, like, again, I think he probably despised them as well, because didn't yeah. one of them kill themselves?
I think so. And then also the implication that they had like a freeway love affair, so there was obviously some
yeah
like,
I think he is kind of like, he's used the freedom of sex expression and kind of tricked audiences into thinking this is really interesting and layered and nuanced, into he actually kind of like despised them for that and is using it to kind of shame them.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you even have the thing of like him saying, oh, people are only gonna know me as Charlie Chaplin's son, and you know, I should be grateful. I think he fucking believes it, this guy.
Believes that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We discussed remake, rip-off, sequel and screenplay. So then the last one is also then the worst screen couple, the second nomination for the real life characters and the fallacious White House
yeah,
bedroom
this was
scene.
Awful.
That was a horrible scene.
Horrible. There was absolutely
and completely unnecessary.
No need for it whatsoever.
Didn't
you could
develop
even
anything.
Imply it if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You could even do it where there was a sex scene where it was kind of abusive and non-consensual yeah. and was, but he played it for laughs practically.
Yeah.
It was yeah. almost as if we were supposed to be like angry at her, which is mm-hmm. so unfair. So unfair, like, and it didn't.
Yeah, like
we don't
she
know
chose
it
to be there.
Fucking
she
happened.
Was so drunk that yeah. she chose to be there, and she was high, and she did
that
it anyway.
That was
she,
the most misogynistic scene in the whole thing. Yeah. Absolutely,
I still think the baby.
Oh yeah, no, the baby. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That and the baby.
quite close to tie.
Yeah.
Okay, so just gonna rattle through them again, but I feel like we know where we're at. Worst picture.
Yeah. Now.
It was always a yeah for me.
It was mid for me. But the only thing saving it was the technical aspects. And now I know the lens, literally and figuratively, he shot it through. Get in the bin.
Cool. Worst remake, rip-off, sequel. A tough one because we've not read the source text. So we'll...
But I think,
know, well,
I think yeah, probably, because...
You just like, you're now like, yes for everything.
We can all agree that it's a controversial book. But things like the focusing on the abortion thing and all of that, like, I don't think I can particularly let that stuff go.
Slide.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worst supporting actor no. for both nominations. No. I think no. I don't think they were particularly strong or good, but I would also imagine that's down to the direction. Yeah. Worst screen couple, big yes for both. That's, yeah. again, the fallacious White House scene. But absolutely for Andrew Dominik and his issues with women, yes. you... dickwad. Worst director, Andrew Dominik. Yes. It's a yes from me. Cool. Stick to music videos. Misogynistic music videos.
Is that what he did?
And I don't know. He just seems to be. And I feel bad when I say that, because actually music video direction is an art.
Oh yeah, I used to want to work in music videos.
Yeah. So I should stop saying that as a down. My apologies, music directors. And worst screenplay. I'd go yes because of all the mention of daddy. I can't stand by any screenplay that uses the
word
daddy
what?
That much. I felt quite violently ill.
I feel like I've kind of tricked myself into thinking it was fine before when I watched it. And now getting the background, getting the purpose, getting the book, getting, you know, all of this stuff. I liked the cinematography and the editing. That's it. I didn't like anything else.
Yes.
And I think that yeah. this is part of the problem. So go on, yeah. knock that one on there as well.
Whoa, ding, ding, ding. I think that's the end of Blonde. yeah, I mean, you know, come to us and let us know what you thought of Blonde. Would love to hear anyone, yeah, the reasons why people did like it. But I did not for both offensive reasons and just I genuinely stand by the fact I thought it was incredibly boring.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We hope you can join us for the next episode where we keep running down that road on the way to the Razzies 2023. See you then.